You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, we are back. UFC 260 going down tomorrow night, and we are here to talk about that card, including the big one for the heavyweight championship of the world, the rematch between Stipe Miocic and Francis Ngannou, going down tomorrow night at the Apex in Las Vegas. I'm very excited. I got a little more fired up during the face-offs and the stare-downs. I'm ready. I am ready for tomorrow. I hope you guys are as well. Welcome to our preview show. We are live all over the place, I believe. YouTube, Twitter, perhaps Facebook as well. So thank you all for watching right now. I am Mike Heck, being joined by the Prince of Positivity himself, Alex K. Lee, in Toronto. And of course,
what is up, my friends?
And of course, the man on the ones and twos, DJE, Casey Lydon. There he is.
Oh, can DJ. I do another intro?
Yeah. You want to do another intro, AK?
Yeah. I think I wasn't sure whether I should do like a silent wave or I just wanted to go UFC 260, Miocic Ngannou 2 heavyweight title rematch.
So the preview show has become the Arsenio Hall show. That's great.
I just think people are. I'm not feeling a lot of energy around the card, so I'm just bring a little Arsenio.
I had energy to do your woo thing. Then it kind of.
I'll tone it down.
Yeah, bring it back, man. This is cage fight.
I'll dial it back.
Bring it back.
Right. There you go. Align your center. Find your chi, AK. You're the Prince of Positivity. Chakras, we need you, man. Listen. What we're going to do is we want it mostly to be about you guys. Like, I know we're going to do the pre-fight Q&A tomorrow, and it'll be more about you guys, but we have a lot going on. We had the weigh-ins. We had the face-offs. We had Miesha Tate. We had Daniel Cormier. We had Aljamain Sterling apparently going full heel turn, which is honestly pretty cool, if we're being honest. It was just kind of weird to think about, but he should lean into this whole thing. And then coming up at the top of the hour, more combat sports. There's a press conference for the Jake Paul versus Ben Askren boxing match on April 17th. Jose Youngs, the man, the myth, the legend, en route to that press conference. So we'll have that for you as well. I'm sure that'll be loads of fun. Lots of trash talk. Should be glorious. But for the meantime, it's all about UFC 260. Of course, the main event for the heavyweight championship of the world, Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou. AK, we talked all about this on Between the Links, so I'm going to start with you, Casey Lydon. I know you gave your take on the weigh-in show about this fight. So I guess my question is for you, how much do you feel like Francis Ngannou has improved? Because that's the big question heading into this fight, because the sample size since that first fight at UFC 220, Stipe dominated, he loses to Derek Lewis, and then he's had four first round KOs, nothing like over a minute and 10 seconds since then. He's fought for less than 3 minutes since the Derek Lewis fight. How much can one improve in that amount of time, especially when they're getting quick finishes like that?
Well, he can definitely improve a lot. But the thing is, it's just faith-based. We have no real evidence that he's improved. Like, for all we know, he hasn't worked his takedown defense or getting off his back a single minute for the last, 3 or 4 years. How long has it been since he fought?
2017?
Whatever. Over 3 years.
2018.
Almost 3 years. Yeah. No clue. And we just assume he's gotten much better. We assume when he fought Cain Velasquez, he trained a crap load for wrestling. We assumed when he had his rematch with Curtis Blaydes, he was ready to defend that takedown. He just didn't need it because he has these two things, you know? So I have no clue. No freaking clue. I'm just assuming Francis is a professional fighter who learned from his mistakes. And now that he has a completely new team with him compared to the first time they fought. And, with an extreme couture, I'm just assuming he's learned from those mistakes and is going to be better. And that's all we know. There's no real evidence for anything. Which is part of the reason why this fight's so freaking awesome. Because I don't know. I watch every dang fight in the world, but I have no idea what's going to happen with the most important heavyweight fight of the year. You know, so what am I doing here?
Well, probably the second most important, yeah, because John Jones awaits in the wing. So
that's a myth. We'll see if that happens.
Still not buying it.
Yeah, still not buying it.
Let me ask you this, AK, because I've had people DM me about this, and I wanted to get your take on this because we covered like every angle of this fight on Between the Links and all the different hot takes and stuff like that. What happens if Francis Ngannou loses again to Stipe Miocic? And I asked that question because after he lost to Stipe at UFC 220, it took him 5 fights to get back to the spot. And a lot of people thought he deserved this title fight, you know, after 2 knockouts, like when Cormier was the champion. Of course, they were tied together, DCA and Stipe, but here we are. But the heavyweight division, now we get John Jones, Derek Lewis is emerging, and now we got some young whippersnappers trying to make their way up there as well. Do you feel like this is Ngannou's last chance to become champion?
Not at all. Not at all. I'll make a bold prediction. If he loses on Saturday, is it his last chance to fight Stipe Miocic for the championship? I would have to imagine almost definitely, because... But I say that because I think we know that Stipe Miocic, I don't know, maybe he fights for another 5 years. I would doubt it. I think Stipe Miocic takes a few more big fights, possibly a John Jones matchup, of course. How can that not be of interest to him, both from a monetary standpoint and the, you know, wanting to challenge yourself? I'm getting to fight friggin' John Jones, possibly becoming the first guy to give him, you know, his first defeat. But other than that, once he fights John Jones, if that happens, win or lose, I think if you're Miocic, you're gonna plan to step away at some point. Certainly if you can afford to. You know, he's been in a lot of tough fights. I think I don't think he's looking forward to going through another, facing the next wave of heavyweight challengers. Maybe he can beat them, maybe he can't, but it's a tough division to fight, and it's a lot of damage you're going to take. I don't care who you are. That first Ngannou fight, we always say, man, he won, he dominated, and yet by the end he seemed pretty exhausted. Maybe he wasn't hurt, but it was like that was a legitimately tough fight, even though he was in control for most of it. So to focus my answer, no, Ngannou will get another shot at the heavyweight title after Miocic retires. If he doesn't assuming he doesn't beat him on Saturday, at some point Miocic will be out of the way. I think Ngannou is going to be fighting for a long, long, long time, and I would still pick him over pretty much anyone else in the heavyweight division right now. So unless one of these guys coming up makes a big leap, I think Ngannou is the guy to beat should he not win on Saturday and should Miocic retire and eventually vacate the title. So not his last chance at all. Last chance at Miocic, yes, but Ngannou will be UFC champion someday.
And let me just clarify. I don't think that this is Ngannou's last chance either. This is just a question that has been brought up to me a few times, so I wanted to present it here since, AK, we did 30 minutes on this friggin' fight during Between the Links yesterday. So we've hit it from all angles. So let's just make our pick here and then go. We'll touch on the co-main event and then we'll go to the peeps because we got probably like 30 minutes or so before we go and get ready for the press conference. You both are with Francis, right? You're both hashtag and new. AK, let me start with you. More specifics.
Look, it's I've just, and I hate to do it because I think Miocic is in great shape. He's a great athlete. I think the best version of Miocic, maybe, probably. Let me be more affirmative here. I think the best version of Miocic beats the best version of Ngannou. And I say that knowing that maybe we haven't seen the best version of Ngannou yet. So to be fair, but from what I know, I think the best version of Miocic beats the best version of Ngannou. But Miocic is 38 years old now. That's a lot of years since their last matchup. I think Ngannou is only further into his physical prime. So just taking into account just logical kind of physical regression and assuming Ngannou has made any improvements from that first fight again, and this is an assumption because we don't know because we haven't seen it in actual practice. I have to go with Ngannou. He was close a couple of times in the first encounter to landing one of those kill shots, and I think he does this time. I think he gets the finish in the first or second round.
A quick one, Casey. You're on Team Ngannou as well here. First, second round as well for you.
I go Ngannou within the first 90 seconds or Ngannou early second round. Maybe only because if he doesn't knock Stipe out in the first 90 seconds, he will be a little more patient and he won't just unload everything and gas out within that first round. I think he'll kind of go crazy like he kind of normally, not crazy, controlled violence in that first minute or so. And if it doesn't happen then, I still think I'm going to assume he's better at getting the takedown. I figure he'll stuff a couple of Stipe's. He'll stuff a couple of Stipe's takedown or trip attempts, and by the second round, he'll finish. He'll finish Stipe, and we'll have an and new. And I'm basing this on. I'm basing this on because I trust Francis is with good coaches. That's all.
This could very well change tomorrow. I talked about this on the weigh-in show. I'm going with Stipe Miocic to retain tomorrow for a number of reasons. One, sometimes as good as any fighter can be, sometimes one man just has your number. And I don't know if Stipe is the guy that has his number. He certainly had his number at UFC 220, and we've seen what Francis has done since then. Yeah, the fight against Derek Lewis, there's some mental things there. He's talked about it before, but man, did he come through. Four ferocious finishes in a row. Could Francis go out there and knock Stipe out in the first minute of the fight? Absolutely. He could do that to any man on earth. But Stipe is 100% ready for that. His team is 100% ready for that. And I feel like for Stipe at this point, beating Francis Ngannou is, you know, a nice little notch in the belt. But it's kind of like the way Kamaru Usman is approaching the Jorge Masvidal fight. Like, yeah, let's go in there. And I already beat the man, but I want to stop this man. I want to go in there and stop him. I want to make it more definitive than the first fight. And I feel like Stipe, deep down inside, even though he won't say this out loud, because he's a very relaxed individual, he just wants to fight, doesn't want to do anything else, I think he feels the same way. I think that competitive nature inside of him to not just dominate the fight, but to stop Francis Ngannou is in his head. Like, that's a goal he has in this fight. I think he has more ways to win. Clearly, the longer the fight goes, the more it favors Stipe. He's just going to weather that storm, and that storm that's coming at him is a category 4 hurricane, and it's a dangerous one. But if he can survive it, I think he wins this fight. I think if it gets midway through the second round, things change, he gets it done. I think Stipe wins. And right now, I think he stops the fight in the fifth round. I think he gets a late stoppage.
Ooh.
You know, but I think it's really interesting too, is like, I mean, you have to remember like how young into the game Francis was when they fought the first time. And like I kind of compare this a lot to a little bit when Stipe lost to Stefan Struve. If they were to rematch anytime after that, everyone would pick Stipe, you know, because Stipe was kind of so young. I think that was his first main event when he fought Struve. And it was a lot of firsts for Francis, too, when he fought Miocic for the title. And but the big kind of unknown for me, actually, is what you talked about, Mike, is the mental hurdle, that Derek Lewis fight. That one really worries me, because could Francis basically come out there and kind of, like, not like you know, Dana White said Kevin Holland a mental breakdown, but Francis have a mental breakdown when he sees if he gets taken down? Is he gonna flash back to that first fight? Is he gonna freeze up and just not fire? I mean, not throw his hands at all, because he just, well, I can't worry about the takedown. And could this possibly be a Lewis Ngannou type horrible 25-minute fight? I don't know. But I think that possibility is out there. I just want to put it out there just in case it happens so I can take lots of credit for it.
Yeah. I think I wonder, and I said this before the face-offs, I wonder if Stipe is going to throw a lot of kicks in this fight. I know it's dangerous territory, but if he starts lighting up that calf of Francis Ngannou, starts landing leg kicks, it's a different fight, man. It's a different fight. And we've seen what Stipe needs to do to win this fight, but I have a hard time believing, especially knowing that Francis Ngannou is at Extreme Couture working with a phenomenal coach like Eric Nixick, that they haven't prepared for that same guy. Like, it's hard. You got to focus on yourself because this game evolves so much, but you know that they're working on the takedown defense. They're working on getting back up to the feet. What if Stipe just says, screw it, I'm just going to kick him in the legs 5,000 times. There you go. How you get? It's a whole different thing.
Can I? Oh, well, first of all, hey, Jen Mishu, what's going on? You know what? I thought we invited him. I guess. Sorry. You know what? My problem with my Wi-Fi. I think the DM didn't go through. So
yeah,
sorry about that, Jen. Check your spam folder too. I did email you as well. Sorry, that's my fault, guys. I want to add. I like that you mentioned Eric Nixick, of course, Mike being his coach for this fight. I love that Eric said a couple weeks ago, I'm watching the first fight every day. So I just have this image of him just like beautiful minding it. Just like he hasn't slept in like 2 weeks. He's probably watched it more than once a day, and he's like two or three times a day. He's just on the window like this. Yes, this is the angle, with best angle to approach to avoid takedown. And I also love that Kamaru Usman's in his corner. I get it. These are all factors outside of what's actually going to happen. But it's cool. Like, again, since, as we said so many times, we don't know so much about Ngannou's improvements in the cage, we at least know he's surrounding himself with like a super team ahead of his next title opportunity. And that's very cool. And I think these things do matter. When you reach this level, every little degree matters. I know people will say, well, you know, if Kamaru Usman coached me against someone, it's not going to make a difference. I'm garbage. But if at this level, when you're talking the best of the best of the best, if Kamaru Usman can make like Ngannou even like 2% better, and if Eric Nicholson can make him even 2% better, that's the level that him and Miocic are at now. So you just need that much more of an edge. And that, you know, whatever advantage there may be, it could be the difference between the knockout he couldn't get in their first fight and the knockout he might get on Saturday.
Such a fascinating fight. Like, it's really interesting. I say these things like I know what's going to happen. Casey said it best. I have no idea what is going to happen tomorrow night. It's so interesting, and that's what makes this fight so good. And I think that kind of speaks to the co-main event as well, because we got Vicente Luque, massive favorite, -230 against Tyron Woodley, who is more than a 2-1 underdog right now, the former champion, who has lost 15 rounds in a row in dominant fashion to Kamaru Usman, to Gilbert Burns, to Colby Covington. This is do or die for Tyron Woodley. I mean, we've seen what's happened with Overeem and Dos Santos, and we've seen what has happened with some of these guys who were former champions or fought for the belt. And these guys that are making money, if they're not winning fights, they get shown the door. And if Tyron Woodley loses four in a row, doesn't matter at this point. Like, you could say, oh, he lost to the three best welterweights, but if he loses to Vicente Luque, AK, you have to imagine this is it, right?
No, I mean, Marion Renault is getting another shot, right? I mean,
that's Marion Renault is not making Tyron Woodley money.
She's not making Tyron Woodley. She has said that this is her, she has said it's like her retirement fight. So like, it's almost like they're like, okay, well, we're doing a mutual ending. And also, she's doing them a favor because Miesha Tate needs an opponent. And it's like, you know, who's a veteran that she can fight that's, you know, a winnable fight. And Marion Renault is tough, but I'm saying, yeah, you're right. It is different circumstances. That's the point you're making. But I do think he has enough. You're right. The money is a big factor, but I think there's a certain amount of star power Tyron brings that I don't think this will be his last fight. I think we're talking one more. I'd also like to know what his contract status is. I guess we should probably figure out his contract status, because if there's like two fights left, obviously I would think they would let him fight out the last fight in his contract and maybe figure it out from there. But no, I don't think it's the last fight. But you know, we talk about how intriguing the main event is. This is intriguing, but for a different way. It's a great matchup. It's a great matchup, logistically speaking, where Tyron Woodley is in his career and where Vicente Luque is in his career. So no faulting that. But I'm concerned, Mike. I'm concerned for Tyron Woodley. I want to be proven wrong, because I think I definitely picked against him in the Covington fight, and, you know, for good reason. I still thought he'd be more competitive than he showed. Maybe I didn't pick against him. You know what, guys? People, don't go to MMAfighting.com and check my predictions for that fight. Okay, we don't need to do that. But after that, I think I maybe kind of made an agreement with myself. I don't know if I can pick Tyron Woodley in a fight again. I was really discouraged, I think, by what I saw in the Covington fight. And again, Covington's a great fighter, so it's not like he'd lost to, what we said, didn't lose to Schlupp. But it's how he looked. It's the result, just, it looks bad enough. And the actual fight, I think, tells an even worse story. So, Tyron Woodley, for some reason this clip makes it to you. I know he's a very media savvy guy. Please prove me wrong. I don't know what I'm talking about, so please prove me wrong and put forth one of those championship level performances. Win or lose, put forth one of those championship level performances on Saturday. I think that's what I and everyone else wants to see.
So, Casey, a narrative that I've heard a few times is, if Tyron Woodley's going to win a fight, this is the fight. Like, I'm not comparing him to Ike Villanueva, but Ike Villanueva losing the fights he had going into his last fight, the narrative was, if Ike's going to win a fight, he's got to win his last fight. You know what I mean? With the opponent that he had. And this is no disrespect to Vicente Luque, because Vicente Luque is a monster. But Tyron's not going to fight. I mean, these are the guys at this point that if Tyron can't beat, like, you have to start to question things. And Vicente, like I said, is a very good fighter. But Tyron is a former champion. He's only losing to like the best of the very best throughout his career. Is this kind of, do you kind of view it the same way? Like, if Tyron is going to get a UFC win, it's going to be tomorrow night.
Well, first of all, I didn't think we'll be talking so much about Ike Villanueva today, so that's exciting. But I understand what you're saying. I don't agree. I think Tyron can lose this fight and still be a relatively ranked welterweight. Because both guys have in common, Luque and Woodley, is they lose to the best of the best. They haven't lost to nobodies. So I think this fight's really important for Tyron to know if he's, you know, ever going to fight for a title again, which I doubt. Even if he wins this fight, I just think the age is too much of a factor to overcome. But as long as Woodley doesn't get grinded out for three rounds, if he loses like a slobber knocker and kind of just starts throwing hands and gets caught, then I think that's different. I think we're just worried that Tyron Woodley isn't going to look like he's trying, because that's just the impression we get. Just like, well, he looks in good shape, but he's just not trying hard enough. And I felt like we said a lot about Kevin Holland even last week. Well, he just needs to try harder, you know, which is it's a weird thing that we say, but that's what we feel. Like, Woodley just doesn't look like he's motivated in there. But Luque isn't Gilbert Burns. He isn't Covington. He isn't Usman. He's not a guy that's going to be able to hold Woodley against the cage or on his back for 15 minutes. So that's why this fight's very different. That's why I love this fight.
AK, you got that ponderous look on your face.
Is there any chance that he retires? Is there any chance that he retires either because it takes another loss or he wins and decides this is, I know he said something this week about going out on top and, you know, maybe that means fighting for a title someday again or not. But like we said, that seems unlikely. Is there a chance he puts on a great performance on Saturday and has a feeling of like, this is now the time for me to step away? I have a family. I have other business interests. I'm mostly undamaged, I guess, or probably, you know, as healthy as I can be right now. And I don't want it to get any worse. What do you think? Retirement either way, win or lose?
I don't know. I mean, it's possible. I don't see that quite yet.
You know, if he gets a big knockout over Luque, I was like, oh, that'd be a good way to go out. But I don't think Tyron's that guy. I think, you know, he still feels he could beat Usman. He still feels he could beat Covington. He still feels like he could beat Burns. He's that guy still. He still thinks he's on the first team. But unfortunately, maybe he's like a third team guy now, you know. I don't know. I mean, clearly I think no matter what happens, he's good enough to be in the UFC, even be like a top 15 guy. Now, is Woodley going to be okay with not being the best and just being a really good fighter? I don't know.
Very interesting fight. If you hear a bunch of yelling, it's my kid all angry and hulking up there. So I apologize if you hear that.
No. I don't think it's coming through.
It's driving me crazy. So there you go. Luque, a pretty sizable favorite in this fight. Biggest favorite on the card is Sean O'Malley still at -305. Thomas Almeida, the comeback on him is +275. Jed Meshew, 0% chance he walks away if he wins. I'm probably with Jed on that one, but who knows?
I'm not talking money and contract stuff because that's a whole other issue that we actually just don't know enough information about to really because the money, like Mike said earlier, no. Woodley doesn't fight for the same pay that Mary Renault fights for, so that's gonna be a business decision on the UFC and Tyron Woodley's part. But just as far as competitive spirit, no way he retires off a win. I agree.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, again, very interesting fight. I have no idea how this fight's gonna play out. Like, I favor Luque, but if we get even a smidge of the old Tyron, the guy that, you know, was out in space and blast people and wrestling. And, you know, if we get even just like a piece of the guy who fought Darren Till, then things are interesting. So I have no idea. Because remember that? Like, he had a couple of snoozers and then he goes out and starches Darren dominated. Till, has like a perfect fight. It was like a perfect fight.
It was one of the most dominant championship wins I've ever seen.
It was amazing.
And he was an underdog. I'm pretty sure he was underdog going into that fight with Till too. Yeah.
There's a lot of people who picked. I think I picked Till. Again, people don't go to MMAfighting.com and look at my predictions. All right, that's all. Yeah, I mean, look, if this fight with Luque happened like 2 years ago, Tyron would be like an 8-1 favorite, right? It's crazy that, and I get it, 2 years is a long time in MMA, you know, in MMA time, but it is amazing how quickly their perception changes, because he would have been a massive, 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 massive favorite. And no one would have, like, if you saw 8-1 favorite for Tyron Woodley over Luque 2 years ago, you would have been like, yeah, that sounds right. And now it's closer to even, right? Or Luque is slightly favored.
Luque is the favorite. But that's why I think
slightly.
That's why I think it's crazy.
Big that 2-1.
No, 2-1. Big. He's a big favorite. Yeah. Right. That's why I think that line's crazy, because the same people that the same fighters that Woodley lost to, Luque would lose to too.
Yeah,
and the same people that Luque's beaten to get to this point, I feel like Woodley beats. So yeah, it's a good match. It's a good match.
Yeah, Luque was like a very slight dog against Stephen Thompson, like very light. It was almost a pick 'em.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
MMA match right there. So Woodley clearly is going to win.
Yeah, Thompson closed at a minus. Yeah, actually, Luque closed as the favorite, -135.
Wow, against Wonderboy?
Against Thompson.
That's absurd.
Thompson was -130, so it was like basically a pick 'em.
That's one I know I got right. Oh wow, I did not remember that. I did not remember Luque being favorite. Wow. Yeah, he's a hard guy to gauge.
Wonderboy had lost, what, three fights in a row? Or two? He lost two in a row, right?
Sure.
So
maybe Woodley's in the same position now, right? Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Wonderboy was coming off the Pettis knockout, correct? Is that it?
Yeah.
I mean, I get, you know, people, you know, you're only as good as your last fight type of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, he had the loss to Darren Till. I still think Wonderboy won that fight.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that fight. That fight was forgettable.
All right. What are the peeps saying? We'll go to them for the next, you know, 15 or so minutes.
Let me see.
Kamaworthy Jamie Malarkey's on the main card. Miranda Maverick versus Jillian Robertson on the main card. And then, like we mentioned, Sean O'Malley versus Thomas Almeida on the main card.
Some people asking questions about other cards. People don't ask about, come on. We'll have plenty of time to talk about future cards.
We don't have a direct question about it. Let's talk about O'Malley and Almeida.
Well, okay, I did see someone ask. I think our pal, John Danian, I think was asking. I didn't watch the UFC Destined program that they did for O'Malley, but apparently, you know, it showed a different side of anything. And I think the question was something like, are we getting a more mature, you know, thoughtful Sean O'Malley? And will we see that, you know, will that affect his performance on Saturday? Will we see an improved, you know, will that lead to in-cage improvements? Casey, you seem skeptical about the whole premise of the question.
why would a mature O'Malley be have anything to do with the outcome of this fight? I don't like O'Malley's O'Malley. You know, I think, you know, he does his podcast, he says a lot of stuff, and now we know a lot more about Sean O'Malley maybe that we didn't need to know. But
I'm not seeing the change in maturity per se. I saw the
comments that he said about, you know, Megan Anderson on Ariel's show. I was like, all right, that's a mature guy, I guess. I mean, but that doesn't matter. When they fight, they fight. I just like this fight a lot. I think Sean O'Malley is kind of, you know, the new Thomas Almeida. If, you know, people remember when Thomas Almeida came about, you know, everyone thought he was he was the next bantamweight, you know, champion. But then he ran into Cody Garbrandt. Then he ran into Rob Font. Then he ran into he lost to another really, really top tier bantamweight. But Rivera. Yeah. So he lost to two. He lost to basically three top five bantamweights. Does that mean Thomas Almeida sucks? No. It just means he's not top five. Now people said the same thing about Sean O'Malley. Oh, this guy, he's gonna, once he knocked out Wineland, you know, he's like, oh, this guy's gonna be fighting for the belt soon. You know, and then we saw what happened with the Vera fight. Now, obviously, he took that loss uniquely, I guess. And so we're just going to find out, you know, whose hype is real. you know?
John wanted to clarify. He meant, would this new personality affect his star power? And it's like, no, maturity never makes you a bigger star in the UFC. This is definitely not. People like me in the media, hoity-toity people like me in the media might be like, oh, yes, I love this new Sean O'Malley. He's so classy now. But your average fan, they don't give a crap. What? They don't want to see a kinder, gentler Sean O'Malley. That's not a thing. Yeah,
Conor McGregor got on mature? And then he got his butt kicked by Dustin Poirier because he was like the polite Conor McGregor. Get out of here.
The most boring press conference ever. I'm sorry. I'm just saying.
My opponent's very good. I trained hard for him. I hope I win.
Hot sauce. I love Dustin's hot sauce. Yeah, that was great. That was so many great, memorable McGregor moments from the lead up to that fight. No, I don't know. I think kind of what you said, Casey, about it, I don't think it'll affect his performance at all, and I don't think it'll affect his star power that much, whether he's mature or not. I think he's kind of built a brand for himself, and as long as he doesn't deviate from that too much, I think his popularity is only going to grow. There's something about him that he's really connected with people, and more power to him for that. If he can make money off of it, he can build his brand off of it. Good for him.
What's going to affect his star power is Saturday night. If he beats up Almeida, star power goes up. If he gets knocked out by Almeida, star power goes down. I think who he is who he is, and that's what we like. You know, love or hate, we still watch it. It's a car crash, you know, or a beautiful rainbow, depending how you want to look at it. But
I want people to change, Casey. Okay. I want people to change. Listen, the way I want. Yeah.
Listen, Sean O'Malley, he says dumb things. Mm-hmm. It happens. He says dumb things. But Sean O'Malley lives the life that like a lot of like 20-somethings want to live. He fights people. He plays video games and he smokes the wacky tobacco. I mean, and does it freely. That's what like every 20-something-year-old strives to be.
He's living the American dream.
Sean O'Malley has done. Yeah, he's living the American dream, and he fights, and he makes money, and he knocks people out. Like that's what like 20-something-year-old guys all want to do. All of those things: play video games, fight, and smoke funny things that make you feel good. Like that's what he does. So, this is an interesting fight because I think Almeida has the skill set to beat Sean O'Malley. Like I think it's there. The problem is Thomas Almeida gets dropped in every single fight. Every time he fights, he gets dropped. And we saw what happened when Rob Font dropped him. You don't recover from that. He puts you away and that's it. And Sean O'Malley's got some pop on him. That boy can throw and he can land and it's devastating. So the question is, AK, can Thomas Almeida avoid the big shot? Can he start taking his shin and smacking it against the legs of Sean O'Malley? Because if he does that and gets off early, this is an interesting fight. But the problem is, once Sean lands, is he going to be able to take that shot?
I mean, that's kind of the fear for Almeida, right? Is technically, if we're talking just technically, I would think most people would say Thomas Almeida is a better striker. And Sean O'Malley is a great striker. It's just Almeida is really, really, really good. And like I said, maybe the results that people have seen recently, people have forgotten. But again, it's been against high-level competition. He's a great, great, great striker. But yes, he does have a tendency to get hit. and again, when you're dealing with someone like O'Malley, he can come at you with some pretty crazy angles. And I think is one of the more potent finishers at 135 pounds. That could end up being his downfall. So, you know, again, I haven't finalized my picks yet. I do think I'm leaning towards Almeida, but it seems like a very, very dangerous pick to make based on all the things you just mentioned, Mike. It's like, will we see, we talk about the maturity of O'Malley. Will we see a more focused, more mature Thomas Almeida? Is this, are we possibly seeing the beginning of the sort of the second stage, the resurgence of Almeida, or are we going to see a lot of the same old mistakes we've seen in his fights, which has us, you know, talking about him almost like he's a missed opportunity, even though he's only 29 years old. You know what I mean? But it's funny, it's missed opportunity, cautionary tale. Will we see that version on Saturday? Hopefully not. Hopefully we get a competitive fight from both guys. But we know how this game works sometimes how much disparity there is between how we view the winner and the loser. So I don't know, leaning towards Almeida, but yeah, that O'Malley finishing power can't be discounted.
Casey, the way I look at this fight is that Thomas Almeida, and we were raving about Carlos Condit and how exciting his fights have been in his career. If Thomas Almeida can find like the Carlos Condit that fought Nick Diaz, he has a good chance of winning this fight. Like, oh, sure. Just landing the leg kicks, being very patient, not getting into that like rumble style that put him over. I mean, Thomas Almeida likes to stand in there and throw bombs and take bombs and just have exciting fights. Can he tone that down? Like, do you think he can flip that switch and be more technical, be more patient and pick his shots and kind of win a boring decision? Because I think that's his true path to victory here.
No, I don't think he can do that. I think it's just gonna be a battle of chins in there. You know, they're gonna punch each other a lot and they're gonna see who's more durable. I think that's what's gonna happen. And and I don't know who's more durable with O'Malley being, what is he, like 5'11"? You know, he's giant height. You got a giant, you know, height and reach advantage, but that comes at a cost. You know, it comes, you're basically, I don't know if O'Malley is durable enough to face these top bantamweights. Mm-hmm. I don't know how hard O'Malley's weight cuts are. I don't know if he's going to be a 35 or forever. But I think this is actually going to be a super exciting fight, and I think someone's going to get knocked out in the first round.
I feel like not enough people are talking about this fight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially with O'Malley coming back, and Almeida's got the weapons. I mean, this is not like what happened in the Vera fight is not the first time we've seen O'Malley deal with leg kicks and have leg injuries. This is like that was like the third time it's happened to him. So
the infamous Sukumtas fight.
Yeah, and even like one of his fights before the UFC, he won. Same thing. Got dealt with leg injuries, got stretchered out. Like, he's dealt with leg issues before. There's a path. Will he take it? That's a different story. But I think O'Malley's going to win. I just think Almeida's chin just scares me way too much. He just gets dropped so much. And I feel like that range, eventually, O'Malley's going to catch him. And all he needs is one. Yeah. And I think he's going to find it at some point.
I'm just still a believer in Almeida, because now going back and looking at the guys who he lost to at bantamweight, we didn't know how good Rob Font was at the time. I don't think Jimmy Rivera was really, we had him as a top contender either. Even though he never fought for that title, he was always right that kind of between, you know, 3 and 6 kind of mark. So I'm still on the Almeida train, you know, but I can jump off real quick to the O'Malley one. It's right there. So
I like this main card. I'm not saying that outside of the heavyweight title fight, like, oh, everyone should rush to purchase this pay-per-view based on like the rest of the main card. But if you're already, you know, buying the pay-per-view because of Miocic and Ngannou, I don't think you'll be disappointed by the other fights that are supporting. Biggs Omega chin versus shin, which will crack first. Those leg attacks and it's gonna be a big part of the fight for sure. But I like this main
card.
There's
your poster.
I like this main card. I don't think people will be disappointed if they shell out if you're already planning to shell out your money, you're gonna have a good show to watch, I think.
Yeah, Worthy Malarkey will be a good one. Someone's going to sleep in that fight more than likely. Maverick Robertson's really interesting.
Good stuff.
And then the three fights we've already talked about. It's a good main card. It's a fun one. Yeah.
It's a good main card.
Yeah. If you got $70 to throw down, it should be 5 good fights.
Yeah, exactly. And you have a very compelling heavyweight rematch at the top. So, it's not. I don't think it's as bad a pay per view card as some people are saying now. You know, after it lost the Volkanovski Ortega fight, I don't think it immediately became like, now this is it. Now I have to pass. It's like, no, it's still a pretty strong card with a very, very good main event.
All right, we got a few more minutes. Anything else from the peeps?
No, I think everyone's, you know.
Think we're good?
I think we're good.
Listen, we're going to talk more about this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yes.
I mean, we've talked about this a lot already. So, I don't know.
Pre-fight Q&A.
If you've watched, like, everything. Right? Yeah, if you've watched everything from, like, Wednesday on, like, we've talked about this a ton. So we're trying to keep things fresh and ask different things, different narratives that I've heard and people have sent to me. And we'll talk more tomorrow. Should Francis focus on body shots? Surely his power would be wicked to the body, not just the head hunting. That's an excellent question, Michael Easter.
Everyone should be focusing on body shots.
Yes.
Everyone should be focusing on body shots. Yes. But of course, if Francis wants to increase the chances of punching someone in the head, punch him in the body. Hands drop. Oh, look, I can punch the head now. So let's hope Francis.
It's not just a body shot KO in his career, does he? But I don't think he has a body shot KO even before the UFC. I don't think. No.
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of. But can you imagine
No, not gonna think about it.
One of those rib roasters. Like, imagine that uppercut that hit Overeem, but imagine that right into your rib.
Yeah.
You might never fight again. You legitimately might never fight again. Like, that would might just end you. You know what I mean? Like, one clean shot. Like, I know people are saying, like, well, you're getting punched in the head. Well, I mean, yeah. But, like, I'm talking about, like, imagine, like, just your rib just shattering. Just becoming liquid from a Francis Ngannou body shot. That is another fun aspect to watch, to see if he mixes up his striking a bit. Because, again, there was a lot of headhunting in that first fight. We know there was a lot of headhunting. Imagine if he tightens up that boxing and throwing in body work. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, as far as I remember, he's only fought less than 4 minutes in his last four fights. I don't think he even threw anything to the body.
No, didn't have to.
Yeah, didn't have to. It's a waste of time.
Didn't have to. The head's right there. Okay. But with Miocic, it'd be a little more difficult. If he starts mixing that body work, man, I would love to see that.
There's a lot of interesting fights from like a betting perspective on here that are...
Mike. Don't do this, Mike.
No, no. See,
I'm just saying there's a lot of live and interesting underdogs on this card. They're risky, yeah. But a lot of these big dogs have paths to victory. Where I wouldn't be surprised if they won, you know? So there are some interesting ones. I think Modestus Bukauskas being a dog, that's one of those situations where Oleg Zaychuk is a hammer and nails kind of guy, and he could absolutely put Modestus Bukauskas out in the first round, no doubt about it. But Bukauskas has made a living off of weathering storms and taking guys out, and we've seen Oleg Zaychuk sort of wither away as these fights go on, and so that's an interesting dog selection. I think Jared Gooden's an interesting dog against Nurmagomedov, because let's just be honest, if this fight's on the feet, Jared Gooden wins this fight every single time. So it's just a matter of, can he stay off his back? If so, can he get back up? That's an interesting 2-1 dog to look at as well.
That Nurmagomedov name is going to break a lot of hearts. We've said before, kind of like, obviously, you know, that most of these Nurmagomedov guys, whether they're related to Habib or not, are obviously coming from a very strong background. But I feel like the name is pushing the odds just a little bit further every time than maybe they should be. Because I think that with Saeed. Yeah, I think Saeed... Well, he was the one he lost. He lost like his debut, I think, right? Didn't Saeed lose his debut or lost his second fight? And I think he was pretty heavily favored. I'll have to look that up again. But yeah, it's definitely -240. That's big.
Yeah, remember Umar? Umar's debut, who's fighting like a legit dude, and he was like a gigantic favorite. I mean, he won. He performed phenomenally, but...
Oh, Morozov.
He came through. Yeah, Morozov. That's what it was.
Yeah,
but yeah, there's something. Almeida's an interesting dog. Woodley's an interesting dog.
I think
Stipe Miocic is an interesting dog. I mean, there's a lot of dogs that are worth a look. I mean, Jillian Robertson is a dog. I mean, I think Miranda's going to win, but still, Jillian is a very dangerous fighter in those first 5 minutes. We'll see.
When was the last? I know it happens more than I think it does, but like, who was the last, or what were some recent times when the champion? A dominant champion, a champion who's like kind of defending his belt, not like maybe the first time like Jan was, but a long running champion that comes in as an underdog.
Last time a long running champion has come in as the underdog. Well, there haven't been too many long running champions recently, unfortunately. That's kind of, so you're gonna have to go back a bit.
I'm thinking but Volkanovski wasn't a long-running champion.
He just won it. He definitely, but yeah,
was
that
was Conor the
example.
Favorite over Aldo?
No, I don't think so.
But he lost too. So,
I'm just true. I mean, there's definitely examples of this, no doubt about it.
We'll talk about it tomorrow during the fan Q&A before the fights.
Yes, I guess.
Yes, we'll get to a lot of – there's a lot of futures questions too. Obviously, guys, we're going to touch upon that. According to Topology, it was almost a pick'em. It almost ended as a pick'em. So,
yeah,
Aldo was a slight favorite.
Very, very, very – like microscopic favorite. Other than that, Eddie was his first title defense.
Kind of champs had like 2 or 3 defenses, you know, and they still came in as underdog.
Ortega Holloway? No. Max was probably favored, right?
I'm pretty sure Max was favored, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ortega was a very trendy pick for sure. I know a lot of outlets, including myself, picked Ortega, but I don't know if he was a straight up underdog in that matchup.
All right. I'm going to play the music.
And you fight Yablahovich, which is in. He's the underdog.
Yeah. I don't. I can't wait to Jan fights again because I'm going to pick against him and he will win. Because I'm like over seven in his last fight. I'm like how Jed would never pick for Stipe. I never pick for Jan, knowing that Jan will win the fight.
I'm always. Crazy. I don't think I picked him to lose to Rockhold. That's so embarrassing.
That's not embarrassing. Rockhold was a giant favorite going into that fight.
No, it is embarrassing.
Rockhold was minus 250 going to that.
I'm not proud.
No.
Not proud. All right, we're gonna get out of here.
Okay. All right.
We're gonna get out of here. More on this tomorrow.
We'll be back.
Of course,
soon.
AK will have his predictions in the morning. But coming up at the top of the hour, another press conference. This time, Jake Paul, Ben Askren,
the big fight,
Frank Mir, many others. April 17th, it all goes down. You know, Paul and Askren are gonna get after it verbally, so should be a lot of fun. Until then, for AK, E. Casey Lyde, and I am Mike Heck. UFC 260 guys goes down tomorrow night. We'll see you there.
Happy birthday, AK.
Love it.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.